Hey, baseball fans, it's time to swing big on your bets this season. Step up to the plate with an odds boost token from BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. No opt-in is required. Just log into your BetMGM account to receive your odds boost token. Then, place a bet on any MLB game and activate your token. If your boosted bet hits, you'll score a bigger payout, no matter the showdown. BetMGM is your betting home for baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotion offer not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. For Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 1 to 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Craftsman Days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Right now, get a free select tool when you buy the Craftsman V20 2-pack battery kit. Whether it's the backyard, the bathroom, or beyond, Craftsman has the tools to help you power through and get the project done right. Because DIYing is unpredictable, but your tools shouldn't be. Shop Craftsman at Lowe's today. Valid through 6/18 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
Hey everyone, Yas here, and I just wanted to say it's great to have you join me today because I'm sure we're going to have another fantastic episode. So whether you're here for the first time or if you're one of the repeat loyal listeners of the show, I truly appreciate you. But before we get to today's guest, I just have a small favour to ask, and that's if you could just take a brief moment to hit the subscribe button if you haven't already. Ensure that you share it with all your coaching friends, and don't forget to get in touch, guys. Let me know your thoughts on what you think of today's episode or any of the recent episodes you've listened to. You can do this on Twitter at The Coaches Net. Once again, that's at The Coaches Net. And please make sure you do, as I'd love to hear your thoughts, guys. Anyway, on to today's show. I hope you enjoy it. Have a great day, guys.
The Coaches Network.
Hey, guys. You're now listening to The Coaches Network podcast, a podcast aimed at anyone who's passionate about athlete, talent, and personal development. My name's Coach Yas, and I'm a UEFA A-licensed football coach developer, and content creator. I'll be sitting down with a range of guests to discuss their journeys, their life lessons, and how you can make an impact. Enjoy. Right, guys, welcome back to the Coaches Network podcast. My name's Coach Yas, and today we'll be just be picking up on where we left off with brilliant Professor Andy Abraham. In the last conversation I had with Andy, you know, we had a fascinating discussion, to be honest, and there was loads of different things that peaked out for me in particular. So Andy took us through initially his journey, one that he referenced as serendipity, being in the right place at the right time. And in many respects, we covered different parts of what coaching considers. So skill acquisition being one of them. And Andy referenced how skill acquisition is a part of it, but not the whole part of effective coaching. And what piqued my interest in particular was this concept around professional judgment. And, you know, it's a place I'd like to kind of pick up and start off from really with you, Andy. And you introduced that professional judgment being the, at least in the way that I've understood it from what you said, is that the concept of actually coaches having bets and, you know, being able to recognize the odds and observation of what's happening in the moment. And that's possibly informed by their prior experiences and previous insights that they've picked up, whether from personal experiences or other aspects of a coach development within their journey. So yeah, maybe just elaborate a little bit more on that part to start with, and then we can kind of go from there.
Yeah, so I suppose a quick recap on the professional judgment idea is that our actions are informed by our judgments, and our judgments are informed by a connection between our perceptions of what's going on in front of us. So we know we receive information through eyes, ears, whatever, and we use that information in combination with our understanding of the world in order to form judgments, in order to take actions. And we do that every day. Literally everything we do, we are doing that. Some of that will be pretty unconscious. So there's this phrase of tacit knowledge, which is unthinking actions drawing on essentially implicit knowledge or knowledge that we're not aware of. And then other bits will be based around us consciously thinking through our decisions. So when you get into the idea of professional judgment, you start to ramp up the expectations that we're placing on people to form judgments based on something which is probably quite robust. You know, so what's the place of academic theory? The place is to offer people something which will give them a better understanding and a better insight into what goes on in the world. And we all have our theories. So there's this idea of two broad types of theory, folk theory and academic theory. So folk theory is, if you like, what's passed down to us, that we are our own sort of ways in which we think about the world. So if we live in the world, we will learn about how that world operates. And folk theory is constantly handed down to us, which is, simply, if you think about the parents, the rules that your parents give you, those are theories we start to live in the world by. And, you'll know that as a parent as well, which is, I suppose if you look at when you've got kids, young kids, there's a reason we put stair gates up, which is, I don't want you going up there at the moment. Thanks very much. Not until you're ready. So we start to inform the way in which we, people live in the world. So there are these folk theories. And as we get more and more experience, we will form these folk theories. Often they are quite tacit to us. We don't necessarily know they're going on. And one of the best ways to work out what those are is if you give someone a task to do and then say, well, how would I do this? You would probably start to pass on some of your folk theory, but you actually need to be put in the context to know that. So what academic theory is often done, and the vast majority of the time, academic theory grows out of folk theory. As when we start to get a sense of the world, and someone goes, I wonder what would happen if we tested that and if we tried to capture that in different ways, and the classic one, I suppose you could argue, is something like Newton sitting under a tree and an apple falls on his head. And that triggers a whole set of ideas around gravity. And where, suddenly where we've gone, if you're a physicist, where we've gone with the idea of gravity since then is incredible. It's the sort of things which allows us to, to land people on the moon. That's, what's it called? The film about the black women in NASA, something numbers, isn't it? But her capacity to take incredible mathematic theory to predict how we can put someone onto the moon safely and not only and then get them off the moon and get them back through the Earth's atmosphere safely. When you watch that, you understand suddenly why there's a place for academic theory. So when you do that, what you start to see is academic theory gives us the chance to, going back to what you were saying before, lay better bets. So when the first time they brought people back through the atmosphere like that, that was still a bet, but it was a pretty, as they would say, it's a pretty safe bet. They'd have tested it, we'll have experimented on it. They sent, before they sent humans up, they sent, the Russians sent a dog up. But you see what I mean? So the role of theory in that perspective, from that point of view, allows us to create better bets. So professional judgment is about drawing on that more robust theory to lay better bets. The difference is for, I'm not going to say landing someone on the moon is easy, it clearly isn't, but there's probably a greater set of definitives in physics than there might be in things like biology and psychology and sociology and the way those interact with each other, which is why the complexity of coaching is huge, because you're not just dealing with one person with an exact outcome that you're trying to achieve, because humans change and develop over time and we don't really know what the exact outcome is. So we're constantly having to predict that. I suppose capture all that. Professional judgment is probably just layering up the expectations we have on people to make more informed judgments and decisions so that the bets are safer. Without that, then you're sort of guessing. You go from accurate predictions into, like most of us do in the Grand National, sticking a pin and going, that horse, I like the sound of that horse, that'll do.
Yeah, I think the film as well, by the way, is Hidden Figures.
Hidden Figures, that's it, yeah.
But just, it's really interesting just to listen to you speak then. I guess where it takes my mind to is that, that I guess a real key part of coaches or just in us as people getting better at this professional judgment stuff is is the role of reflection, maybe. So, you know, what role does reflection play in that? You know, what does effective reflection look like for coaches to assess that? Because I think one of the, you know, it's interesting having a conversation just yesterday with a group of coaches and the importance of trying to have it as objective as possible. And, you know, part of that being actually you might have had a recall of a moment which might not have been factually correct, which is obviously will influence your perceptions of that situation as well.
Yeah, it's, I mean, obviously there's a whole host of research around reflection in coaching and just reflection in general. Probably a couple of things I'd point out with that. One is that accurate reflections depend on accurate expectations. And setting expectations is really hard because it means you're predicting the future. And if you're a novice coach, that's incredibly difficult because you've never really done very much to give you the sense of what might the future look like. So you then get into the idea of what's the point of planning. Now, often if you're younger, planning is about almost, well, someone's told me I have to do a plan, so here's a piece of paper with a plan on it. Then you watch me deliver and you go, actually, that's not really reflected the plan very much at all. Or the plan is about what I will do as a coach, not necessarily what the players will do as a coach. So one of the hardest things is to predict what you think will happen with players when you set up a practice or when you intervene with them. But that's what an expectation would do. You start to set an expectation and go, well, I think, Sally will do this, and I think Mary will do this. I'm starting to sound like Dara O'Brien in this way. Everyone's called Mary in Dara O'Brien's book, jokes. But you know what I mean? Is you start to accurately try and predict what people do. But that takes a lot of experience to be able to get to that point. So that's the first thing, is part of professional judgment, or at least trying to progress towards professional judgment, is doing better planning, because the planning sets the expectations. And it also causes you to think about what the future might look like, so that when you engage with what that in when you engage in the present, so you predict what's happening in the future, you then engage in that in the present. Because you've had expectations, you're now more able to experience surprise. So that's a key thing that I think it's Donald Shon, who's a big writer in the world of in reflective practice, talks about our capacity to experience surprise. So if we have a surprise, we'll go, oh, what's happened there? We ask ourselves a question. So if I've experienced surprise, I'm now more likely to engage in some reflection. So reflection is incredibly difficult to start doing if you're a novice, because it's hard for you to plan. You're not very surprised because nothing was really set. You never really had any expectations. So when you ask someone to reflect on that, it's actually really hard. So what you often get with novices is they don't necessarily reflect, they describe, they offer you a description. And actually sometimes the starting of being able to reflect is just being able to offer a rich description of what actually happened in the moment. And even then that's quite difficult because you're so caught up in it in the moment, you get to the end of it and go, whew, I'm glad that's finished. Rather than going, oh, I wonder what happened there. So there's the start of it is... And there's a phrase which is used by Paul Shemp, who says, experience is the novice coach's best friend. Just go out and experience what's going on. The other thing which is interesting in this space, especially for young coaches, is it's the work of a guy called Dan McAdams, who talks about that if we look at our behavior, we can predict it through, we can understand it and maybe predict it through understanding who we are from a personality point of view. Understanding it through what our motivational mechanisms are, what are our reasons for doing something, why do I engage in something, and then the life stories that we actually engage in. So he talks about the social actor, which is a personality, the motivated agent, and the autobiographical author. And again, the problem with that for young people is one of the predictions of his theory in that space is that actually young people struggle to narrate their biography until they hit mid-20s. It might start earlier for some, might start later for others. So if you struggle to narrate your biography, it's again naturally hard to reflect on what's just happened to you. And you'll have seen this when you ask, if you ask young people about what did you do at the weekend, and you get a one sentence answer. You ask someone who's in their 30s, what did you do at the weekend? You'll get a story. And it's because we get better at telling stories as we get older. We start to recognize that the story that goes on within our lives, even to the extent we're probably better at narrating ourselves as teenagers in our late 20s, early 30s, or even in our 40s and 50s than we were when we were actually living it as a teenager. So if you want someone to reflect as a young person, again, it's almost something which is, it makes it hard for you to do that. Now, that doesn't mean we shouldn't ask people to do it. We should, of course, ask people to do it. And actually, it does, my experiences, I don't know because I've not read this from McCadden's work, but my experiences is if you encourage people to start thinking about their experiences earlier, they, you can speed up the process, I think. But it's still hard. It's still a hard thing to do. So you've got those two things, which is, can you accurately predict? Can you then go into the environment and actually remember what the hell went on? Can you be surprised? And can you therefore have a, something to reflect against because you've been surprised? And then recognizing that young people will struggle to do that simply because recognizing themselves as autobiographical authors probably doesn't really kick in until our teens and early 20s. And even then, you probably, I don't know what your experience of that would be. Is it, you know, it takes a while for us to start to recognize the story. And I'll finish with this story, but I remember as a early 20s something. So I spoke to you last time about, I worked with Dave Collins, and there's a research group of us. And we used to go, every now and again, we go out for a curry. And I'd listen to him. He'll probably be embarrassed about me saying this, but I'd listen to him tell these amazing stories. And we're going, how do you do that? How do you tell? And now I realize it's because that just comes with age, as you start to recognize the stories that happen. So the fact I'm able to recount that story to you now is probably a reflection of where I am in my life. Whereas when I was in my early 20s, I thought, I haven't really got those stories. You know, I'm not very interesting. And actually, young people are incredibly interesting. They just don't know they're interesting sometimes. So, those that sorts of space. But if you can have some theories which direct what you're trying to do, and you can form expectations, you're now in a position to be surprised, which then means you're more in a position to start reflecting after it.
It's interesting because I was listening to you speak there, and there's a few things that have gone on in my head. I think first thing is, in essence, we start to maybe value things more the further we are from them. You know, I now reflect about some things when I think back about my own coaching journey. There's certain moments that I think back on, I think to myself, actually, that I probably didn't realize it at the time, but that had a real influence on me. And, you know, I was recently having conversations with coaches around, you know, they said, you know, what's questions been something of, you know, some version of, well, what shaped your journey as a coach? And it got me thinking. I think, actually, I've never actually thought about it from that lens, but I guess this moment and that moment, and it's just like, yeah, you know, I probably don't see the value until later down the line. And then coming back to what you said about the experience part, I think one of the challenges, though, I think is for a lot of coaches is, well, how do you qualify experience and how do you quantify it in terms of the value it has in its in the environment it's in? Because I think, I can't remember who said it now, but, you know, it might have been Bruce Lee. You know, is it about having experience with 1,000 kicks or experience with 1,000, one kick 1,000 times? And it's the same piece, right? It's like, what is experience? Is it the amount of time that you've done something? Is it the quality of how you've done it? Or is it just being involved in it? And I guess that's contextual as well. And I think, you know, coming back to the professional judgment piece, it makes me think, okay, there's times where I've worked with coaches and I'm like, okay, how can you not see that? And it's like, well, they don't know that there's something that exists, so they're not going to see it. And then takes me to another conversation I was having recently with a colleague of mine, and saying that, actually, what's the first thing that a coach needs to be able to do? And we kind of decided that actually probably the first thing that coach really needs to be able to do to be effective, we develop that art of, you know, that skill of noticing and observation. Because in essence, like, you know, if you can't see things, then how are you going to affect them?
Interesting. If you ask novices what's the first thing you want to do, it's run a session where I don't look stupid. And if you ask teachers, it's, can I run a class without the kids tearing into me? So it's interesting when you say, well, what do you think's important and what do you think's important? And skill perception is crucial. It's that fundamental that in order to get to the point of having skilled perception, you've actually got to be in the situation enough times to start noticing that there's things to notice. You know, it's almost like where do you jump into it? And actually, when you get into it, there isn't a clear point of to jump in, other than go. I think, well, my sort of sense would be is just go and do it. Just go and do the job for a bit. But let's not expect too much of you. And in fact, let's give you some tools that allow you to, you know, to reduce your anxiety about, oh, is this going to be any good? You know, because anyone in their first time of teaching or coaching, they're bricking it because, oh, God, what if it goes wrong? And I was working with some coaches yesterday. We talked about the role of impression management. And it's one of the biggest drivers of our behavior is don't look stupid, especially if you're a teenager. Don't look, you know, what's the worst thing you can do with a teenager is embarrass them. So if you're working with a young coach who's a teenager, probably that's going to be quite at the forefront of what's going on, which is I don't want to cock this up. I don't want to look stupid. So, well, here you go. Here's a couple of things. So I know what we know from theory, an application of theory is whole part whole is a great way of running a coaching session. Start with the game that you want them to think about. And that might be small sided. It might be whatever. And it might be a condition game. Then take something out of it that you think is going to be important. Do that and then do the game again. And by the way, if we want to start getting you to think about your perception, when you're watching the game, look for these two or three things, because that might give you some insight when you break it into the parts and then do the poll again. There's a relatively comfortable way to allow people, you go, oh, I can just do a game. Yeah, do a game and actually just stand and watch for a bit. You don't, you know, that's fine. You can just do that. And you can take the pressure off a little bit by offering that as a way in. But what they're doing is they're following your recipe. It doesn't necessarily mean that they planned very much, but you can, well, that's fine. That's just our starting point. Let's get you experiencing something so we can then start layering in some other things. So I think there are ways which with young coaches, young novice coaches, and I do deliberately say young because there are some older novice coaches, but older novice coaches tend to have more life experience. So you've got a different thing to tap into there. So it's different working with an 18, 19 year old novice coach versus a late 20s, early 30s parent who's had kids for four or five years. You know, they already know what it's like to work with kids, because it's, you know, sometimes it's great, sometimes it's awful. So you work with different biographies, going back to McAdam's work. So yeah. I think there are ways, but how do you dig into it? You know, I'll give you another one, Yasir, just to give you this. So it's something I was reading about not long ago around one of our key ways in which we look at the motivation to learn is curiosity. So curiosity, when you read the definitions around the motivation to learn, and I just wanted to get into it a bit more. So I found this really nice chapter on it. And again, surprise, because I thought I was expecting to see something, and I read something going, well, I've never thought about that before. Expectations, read something, surprised by it, you start to reflect on it. And what it said was actually curiosity is also about a sense of deprivation, and that I know something, but I don't know enough. So I'm feeling deprived of something, which means I want to go and get something, some more. And they said, there's a difference between that and just exploring a space. So we assume that young people will be curious, but actually to be curious, you need to have a sense of not knowing something. And sometimes young people have no clue what they don't know.
Yeah.
So just asking them to explore a space might be enough in order to get to a, so they can start seeing what they don't know. You know that phrase, we don't know what we don't know.
Yeah.
So exploration gives people a chance to start to find out what they don't know, which you then might get some curiosity, which then gives you a, oh, now you're curious, we can start looking at this.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because my next question was going to be literally, what are some things that we can do to maybe stimulate reflection and curiosity and even critical thinking in coaches. And you kind of touched on it there really, in that the first piece is around really getting them to explore the area first. In which case it might spark some curiosity, or it might even spark moments of reflection, I guess, because it's almost, well, now that they've started to see things that they didn't know before, they might have to start checking and challenging their own past experiences and their current perceptions, right? And have that critical thinking process attached to it. But I guess, you know, you make a point around the differences and appreciating the differences that come with maybe a younger coach as opposed to maybe a slightly older coach, because of the life experiences and whatnot. But so I guess, you know, if we're looking at it from a coach developer lens now, what are some of the things that you would consider in developing an effective environment for learning to take place, whether novice at a younger age or an older age, or even more experienced coaches to think about? Because I think there is, you know, this innate thing within coaching where, you know, if we're honest, we're all, you know, as coaches, we've all got egos. We all want to feel like we're doing the right thing, and we all want to feel like we've got a part to play in that, you know, our voices should mean something in those environments. But actually sometimes it's the opposite. Sometimes the silence is the best coaching behavior
The irony for me, though, that one is strong, but anyway, yeah.
So yeah, just link to that, you know, what are some things that we can consider from a coach developer standpoint? And even if there's any coaches listening to this in particular that might make their environment more effective for learning and development.
For coach developers, do you mean? Yeah. One of the phrases my colleague Bob Muir, who's got a really nice book out in this space around, so, you know, as much as I'm definitely not on commission for that book, and I don't suppose he's made a whole host of money out of it, but Bob's got a really nice book out which talks about his experiences of being an in-situ coach developer. It's basically his PhD that he's turned into a book, but one of the phrases that he uses is start with the end in mind. So where is it we're trying to get you to? But a key part of that in itself is, well, where are we starting from? Which comes back to our professional judgment. So as much as we want coaches to have professional judgment, we need coach developers to have professional judgment. So we talked about last time about who, what, how. So who is it you're starting with? And what's the journey you think they need to go on in terms of to be better? So that then has an impact on the curriculum. So if I understand the who, and I understand the sense of journey we're going to go on, that will then start to have an impact on the curriculum that you might want to, or the syllabus and the curriculum, if you like, the what. What am I actually going to try and help you learn? And almost, but equally, what am I going to teach you? Or what am I going to expect you to go and explore or be curious about? And then you get into, and how are we going to do that most effectively for you within the constraints that we're operating within? So for someone like yourself doing the UA for B, you know, you can make an assumption that they've got the UA for C. You can make the assumption that they've probably got some coaching experiences already, and that there's probably something in there which is this. If you take the theory of constructivism, I'm not building this from the basement up, you know, from the foundations up. I'm expecting you to already be at, almost like, you know, to use the analogy, I'm expecting you to be at the ground floor or even, you know, the first floor. So I should be able to expect that you're coming with some life experiences in terms of being a coach, and that you've seen things and you're noticing things. So I can now start to layer in on top of that what we might do next. And that then has an impact on the sorts of learning experiences you might want to do. So rather than, you know, initially it might be, and to be fair, the FA have done some really nice work in this, which is, let's actually look at you in situ rather than expect you to do something in-house. Now, even that contextually is very difficult because it's quite an expensive way of operating. You know, when I did my RFU awards years ago now, it was, you know, the guinea pigs you had to coach with were the other people on the course. Yeah. And the RFU have tried to move away from that now, which is you do a day, you go and coach during the season, you come back at the end of the season, do another day or something along those lines, which again, on the face of it, that looks like a really nice and neat idea. There's almost certainly going to be issues with that because it's what's happening in between, and I know they try and do things. So the contextual elements of this are going to be really crucial, as in, if you want to do education really, really well, it's quite expensive to do. So in terms of, well, what do we do? Well, fundamentally, we definitely need people to be experiencing coaching. We definitely need
Just to pause you on that one really quickly, sorry, Anne. It's a bit of a tricky one, though, isn't it? Because I guess I'm just thinking about myself, some of the experiences that I've had, and some of them I'm thinking about some specific individuals that I've worked with in the recent times. And, well, even that's down to perception, right? Well, what is experience? Because some would say, well, I've been doing this for 10 years, so therefore I'm experienced. But in other cases, someone could be doing it for 2 years and be more experienced than the person doing it for 10. Yeah. So I think it's definitely perceptual in that respect. But I guess the other challenge is, and I think is something we might have talked about in the last discussion, and I find as a common problem, especially when it comes to maybe more so towards the B license and even above the B license when it comes to qualifications of coaches going through, you get many coaches, and I'm sure you've come across it, but you've got some coaches who are actually deliberate and intentional about their personal and professional development. You get others that are kind of are engaging in awards or qualifications because it's just tick box. It might, you know, or you even get the other end of the spectrum where they're really doing it because they don't really have an interest in what the course is going to offer them. But at the end of it, they know they're going to get a £5 pay rise.
Yeah.
Right. So what ends up happening is they engage with it from different perspectives at different points in their journeys. But a common observation I find is that anyone that comes onto these qualifications, especially the higher you go with them, because they're in those spaces, maybe the environment that they're coming from and the people that they're currently surrounded by look at them as, right, this person's the head honcho, if you like. They know what they're doing. They're the ones progressing their journeys. And what I find is that it leaves them in a position where they often don't get challenged and be given any sort of critical feedback.
Yeah.
So they come into the environment on the course. They come into it, or it just, yeah, just they're in a space now in their journey where they're probably not receptive to feedback in that respect, because they're not used to receiving it. So they're often being told that there's a pat on the back for them because they've done really good coaching. But the question I encourage them to think about is, well, has anyone ever told you why you're a good coach?
Yeah.
Beyond how you made their child feel, have they actually given you any feedback on what you've done that's made you effective as a coach? Or in fact, have you ever asked someone for that feedback when they say, oh, yeah, great job today, I really enjoyed the session or whatever? Have you ever actually asked them, well, what did you enjoy about the session? To establish whether it was actually down to you as the coach that their enjoyment came from, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So I think a couple of things in there for me. One is you use the word intention. I think part of the question in this is, what are people's intentions? What are people's intentions when they come into a coach development opportunity? And that's true for the people on it and the people delivering it. And what are their intentions when they go out and coach? So one of the things that, and I've noticed this in actually very strongly in a lot of sports, but particularly in football, is that the phrase of on the grass is used quite a lot. So we end up thinking that coaching is what happens on the grass. So if you go back to the idea of professional judgment decision making, if you look at that through the lens of saying, I am the coach, so I am therefore, when I do my job, I am coaching. So we talked about this last time, about the first person, third person. So if I'm doing my job, I'm coaching. But if the process of coach development reinforces that actually coaching is just about being on the grass, it doesn't reinforce the role of planning, and it doesn't reinforce the role of reflection, and it doesn't reinforce the role of learning. Particularly learning for the athletes and learning for the coach, because it becomes about the micro delivery rather than what's the point of coaching is, and what's the difference between a coach, and I use this question with students, what's the difference between a coach and a Butlin's red coat, if people understand what a Butlin's red coat is? But you know, the idea of the camp, you know, you go to a Butlin's camp and you've got the children's entertainer. And if we're not careful, we start to present it's just what happens in the hour. So you become, it's the difference between, well, are you just trying to entertain kids, or are you actually trying to coach them? And if we're going to say about coaching, well, what makes the difference? And for me, the difference is my journey, my job as a coach is to facilitate a learning journey for you. So actually, coaching isn't just about the session. It's about sessions. It's about months and years and...
Hey, baseball fans, it's time to swing big on your bets this season. Step up to the plate with an odds boost token from BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. No opt-in is required. Just log into your BetMGM account to receive your odds boost token. Then, place a bet on any MLB game and activate your token. If your boosted bet hits, you'll score a bigger payout, no matter the showdown. BetMGM is your betting home for baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotion offer not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. For Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 1 to 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
And actually, you know, if I'm part of, let's say we'd be look within football, if I'm part of the foundation phase, well, that's a potentially what 4 or 5 year process. Well, what are we expecting with these kids over that time period? And what's your role within that time period? And how do you speak to the coaches? So all of those things, when you start to layer them in, is people doing their job, so therefore they're coaching. So there's an element with, for me, within coach development in itself being clear of saying, what is it that I'm actually trying to help you get better at? And that then layers in quite a lot of demand on the coach developer to have something which is worthwhile engaging in. And don't get me wrong, I fully understand that there are some learners who aren't particularly intending on learning, but then you might question, well, why aren't you intending on learning? What is it about your, going back to the McAdams, what is it about your biography where you turn up to these things and you don't expect it to be an informative educational experience, and you do just see it as being a box-ticking exercise? And then you can then get into the way in which coaches are assessed, which is, I will tell you when you're good. Well, surely it's up to them partly up to them when they decide when they're good. Because if they're always relying on someone else telling them when they're good, they'll then go and reinforce that with the people that they're coaching.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think within that, it's also, again, it goes back to perception, right? It's, well, what is good? Speaking to a coach just last night, actually, I was explaining that, you know, sometimes you could be doing something really well, but it's really well because of the environment you're in. Mm. But the moment you step into another environment, those same things are no longer effective, or in fact, they're not even considered to be good, because the outcomes, the intentions, and the expectations of the participants that you're working with in that environment, or the parents attached to it, if it's youth football, it's completely different. So it's really got to be contextual. But something that you touched on there is about that piece on the biography, and what is it about the biography which is maybe, if you like, disengage you from that learning aspect of being involved in a qualification award of some sort. Mm. I guess the only thing, the immediate thing that came to mind was actually, well, a lot of coaches that I come across who have got that kind of engagement with it is they feel like they're being forced to be there to progress their journeys.
Yeah.
And I think the most common one I see is, it's probably in football anyways, the guys who maybe want to become goalkeeping coaches, or why do we need to do the outfield courses? Mm-hmm. Because, and it got me thinking, I had a recent conversation with someone, and it's like, well, because the goalkeeping courses, as an example, they teach you about the content, but actually the core courses, they teach you about how to coach. Mm-hmm. So there's process involved in that rather than just content and looking at the what. It's just, you know, the core pathway teaches about the how as well. And I guess, you know, you come back to what you mentioned there about coach educator saying, well, I think you're good enough now. Or a coach developer, you know, giving that assessment, what, and partly it's got the assessment of the individual themselves in understanding whether they've been effective or ineffective. But if we don't have someone saying that and or having a standardized, right, this is good and this is not good, how do we get it right?
So I think there's an element to that which comes back to going this idea of start with the end in mind. Well, what is it that you want by the end of this? So when I talk about who, what, how, there's actually six parts of that, which is, so if you're a coach developer, you've got the coach, there's the curriculum you're delivering to them, there's the methods you're going to do that with, but there's the context you're doing it in, so number four. There's the process and practice that you're going to use to do that, which is this a course over, you know, a few weeks? Is this over a year? And then the final one, which is how well do you know yourself? And actually, when you get into that, how well you know yourself is also something we should be teaching coaches. Because if they don't know they're interesting, why would they be interested in being better?
Yeah.
And so we were discussing this yesterday with Axel. I was working with a group of coaches yesterday, and we were talking about, well, how interested are we in them? So, and coach education, degree courses, anyone is, you start with the end in mind, and the end in mind is this set of learning outcomes. But if the learning outcomes don't include the coach knowing themselves better, you won't then plan in time work on how does the coach know themselves better. So we get caught up in the what does this, you know, creating a good practice, you know, how do you beat the low block and the mid block? You know, we get caught up into the, you know, the, what are clearly important topics, but we never ask the question about who are you as a coach and what will it mean for you to be better. So why are we then surprised when they feel like they're not really engaged in the process? Because no one ever says to them, by the way, we're interested in you as a coach. Because now we might do that at the beginning, saying, come on, tell me a little bit about yourself. But why are we asking that question? For me, you ask that question because part of coach development should be about a coach knowing themselves better as a person and as a coach.
Yeah. It's quite interesting. So just to cut you there really quickly, it got me thinking about another experience recently where I was speaking with one of my colleagues as a coach developer. And he said, in fact, he was supporting another coach who's trying to get into coach development around what that process should look like. And he said, give the person who you're working with some support without changing what they've done. So how do we develop what they've got rather than changing it? And it made me think, actually, well, if I can see as a coach or with someone with more experience that what they're doing is just not going to work, is there value in actually just developing it, or is there more value in just telling them, right, let's do it this way? But I guess linking it back into what you were just saying there, you it's kind of getting them to understand, well, actually, I'm interested in your ideas. Let's develop your ideas.
Mm.
And that's part of the, I guess, the effectiveness of the coach developer to identify, right, there's some really good stuff in what you're doing, but it's not all the way there yet, if that makes sense. I mean, would that be fair and accurately linked to what you're saying?
Yeah. So I suppose it's the, you know, one of my favorite phrases that I used to use, and I did genuinely create this myself, which is, if we're going to practice what we preach, we better start with hypocrisy. Because, you know, we talk to coaches about athlete-centered coaching, but then you look and go, but is the coach development coach-centered coaching? And often it's not. How interested is coach development in the coach, and how interested is it in delivering a set of standard slides in this time frame? You know, I've spoken to people who work in coach education who are literally told you should be on this slide by this moment. You know, that's madness. You know, that's like, it doesn't remotely talk about that we're interested in the coach if we do that. Mm. So, you know, and then there's reasons why that's the case, and there'll be some good reasons why that's the case, but at least let's recognize our own hypocrisy in some of these things. It's a bit like I'd be saying that it's important for people to be quiet, then I sit in and talk for an hour, but sometimes it's okay to do that. So, for example, why wouldn't we ask coaches to arrive at a coach education course with a photograph on a slide and ask them to talk for, and that photograph is a picture of them coaching or a picture of the team that they coach, and ask them to talk for 5 minutes about that team and about that moment. Because that would then, you know, we talk about what the coaches notice. Well, what the coach developers notice? What would you be able to see if someone did that at the beginning of a course? Then we might become, but I've got 20 people on the course, and we give them all 5 minutes, and by the time we got a turnaround, that's going to take 6 hours, and suddenly I've lost the first day. And then you go, well, have you lost the first day, or have you just had an amazing first day? And could you actually split up and make it a bit smaller? So, you know, there's ways of managing that.
Yeah.
But it, you actually say to coaches from the outset, I'm actually quite interested in you. Now, that's just an example. I'm not offering that as being that what we should do. It's an example of how does coach development say to coaches, I'm interested in you? Because we're going to say to you that you should be interested in your players, but we never actually spend any great deal of time being interested in you. But then you get to notice, you get to hear where people are in their journey. You get to recognize, you're going, well, you've been quite descriptive. You've not really told me any stories about that team. Then that tells me something, which is you're not seeing the stories yet. So I saw that you can start to recognize where people are potentially in their journey. So I think there's that question. And I also think going back to the question of let's just be clear what the coach development course does. So in a paper I wrote with Dave a few years ago, we talked about coaching being three fundamental things, which is it's political, it's pedagogical, and I would probably now put in, if I wrote that paper again, I'd probably put pedagogical and performative, as in there's a competition element, and it's social.
Yeah.
The further you get into coaching, the more you recognize the political and social elements of it. So early in your journey, you probably want to be quite focused around the pedagogical element of it. But as we get into it, you know, coaching becomes more and more about your social skills of being able to operate in a space. But equally, the pedagogical space shifts from being about a session to being about a year or 2 years. So how does the content of a course change with the coach's journey as well?
It's interesting because I think one of the key things that stuck out for me from what you said last time as well, around linked to what you're just speaking about now, really, is that, you know, coaches are, you know, I think if I remember this rightly, coaches are responsible for two things. It's effectively practice design and coaching behaviours.
That's what they have control over in a coaching session, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, outside of that, they can't really control anything else. So, and it really got me thinking a little bit more, because I speak to coaches all the time, and it goes back to earlier what you were saying around the planning. And I think, you know, one of the things to talk about in the planning process is that, okay, so your typical session plan, you might have, here's your diagram, here's your points, these are the key things. And I often challenge coaches thinking, so in every typical coaching plan that I've come across, you've got some sort of coaching points that you're in hoping to touch on or elaborate on or build into your session. The challenge that I've started setting coaches, well, if you couldn't give those coaching points as points, what are the questions that you would ask the players that would encourage them to explore that for themselves? And a lot of coaches really, like, you know, when I initially give that to them as a task, they really struggle. So, well, I don't know if I would ask a question about that. Well, what if you could? What if you couldn't say to them, you must do this, but you have to ask a question which will encourage them to explore that? Because one of the challenges, obviously, within this learning process or development process, whether it's as a coach, whether it's as a player, is we've got to be mindful that we don't make it black and white, if you like. And he's got to be mindful that, you know, we're not killing the creativity of what someone could perceive to be this moment or this situation or that coaching point, right? So I guess, you know, link to that then, what are some things that you know, because you talk very clearly that you think actually part of it is not just the on the grass stuff, it's the stuff that happens away from it and beyond it.
Yeah.
What are some, you know, things that you would ask coaches to think about now going forward into that planning process? Because the reality is, until they become very intentional in it, a lot of coaches probably don't plan, not deliberately. They know, they're probably just thinking about it on the way to their session in the car or whatever that looks like, and they've not really given it the the time and the effort it deserves and requires to make sure that when they get on the grass, it actually just goes smooth.
Yeah. And I was one of those coaches, by the way.
I think we've all been there.
Yeah. And so this is why, for me, one of the reasons we should teach people how to plan. And part of that would be, let's not just think about planning a session, which might be where we start. But even for those people, it might be, well, what would happen if you, because planning's difficult, it's time consuming. So what would happen if we said, well, rather than trying to do that before every session, how about if you've got a few hours, you actually plan what you're going to do over the next 10 weeks, which is, that's the way the clubs do, isn't it? They do 10-week blocks or something. And it's certainly, if you look at a university, we plan on the basis of 12 weeks. So we've got a set of ideas, a set of intentions in place, so that you don't have to think of everything from scratch. You start with an idea. It's called, there's a phrase we use is nested planning, is what happens if we plan for a little bit more for the longer term? Let's do that. And then let's plan a little bit more detail for 10 weeks of that. And now I've got something to go back to prepare myself with. And I might go, actually, I'm not quite where I thought I'd be, which now means you're reflecting based on an expectation, which means you might start adapting. Again, that's easy to say. It's actually a really tough skill. And, that can take a couple of years to get to that point. For younger, I think for older coaches, for more experienced, well, they could be an older but novice coach, but talking about, well, what would you do over a number of weeks is probably a bit easier to do than doing it with someone who's younger sometimes. So I think there's a question in there about, funny enough, there was a guy who actually used to work for the FA, Ted, his surname's escaping me at the moment, but he was one of the people who did the course with us. And as he got halfway through the course, I remember him saying one thing, which was, and he swore, when something along the lines of, oh my God, I've not been very good at this. And he was, very experienced coach developer. And he said in the room, in front of his colleagues, he had this reflective moment when, I've not been very good at this. And then quite a bit later, he also, he then said something else, which was, I've learned now that if I'm not with them when they're planning, what I see on the pitch, why am I talking about what's going on the pitch, when actually what's going on the pitch is a reflection of the fact they didn't plan very well. So why don't I just spend more time with them in planning, and I can help them see the things that they're missing, and I can start to shape their intentions, and so they go onto the pitch more prepared. So we then have a better conversation at the end of the session, rather than me having to stop this coach in the session because I can see it's all going wrong. So perhaps I'm intervening in the wrong place here. Perhaps if I intervened earlier in the process, earlier in the decision-making process, we can have a better conversation at the end of the decision-making process. So there's a whole range of things in there about, do we really value the role of planning?
I think it's quite interesting because, it is that. And I think, as you were speaking, it makes you think about that professional judgment piece again, and that actually my experience is starting to tell me, especially when it comes to that planning piece, that especially when it gets towards more UEFA B, UEFA A, actually planning is probably where a lot of these people are breaking down.
Yeah.
Because when they get out on the pitch, it's not coming to life. And the reason why it's not coming to life is because they haven't actually effectively planned the session. And they've got an idea of what they want to see, but they maybe just don't have enough of the detail of the considerations which go into understanding how this stuff actually comes together. And I do say that sometimes, that one of the beauties of us as coach developers in the roles that we're in is we've got people in front of us who've got fascinating ideas. You just don't quite know yet how to connect the dots.
Yeah, because it's called forestalling. It's about seeing the problems coming down the line before they arrive. And that's, again, it's one of the things that planning does, is it allows us to go, that I think that will happen. But again, that's hard to do until you've seen it, which is why sometimes having someone sat alongside you going, what do you think that will look like? What do you mean? You go, well, How do you think that will play out? And if it, when it's happening, what are you going to look for? So you almost start to mentor them through the planning process where they'll start you. And again, it depends on how curious they are or how prepared to explore they are. They might go in, all right, thanks, I'll just copy that down because that helps me pass. Or they might go, well, I've not thought about that before. You've just highlighted a sense of something that they don't know. So they've now got the sense of deprivation, which now means they're curious. And that then, learning's done by the learner. Ultimately, it's the learner who has to take some of this on. But there are perhaps ways in which we can facilitate that curiosity by helping them see things before it's too late, or it's never too late, is it? But you know what I mean? It's almost having that person sat alongside them going, come on, tell me what you think is going to happen when you do that. Mm. And they go, and they might look at you and go, I don't know. And you go, okay, well, that's fine. Now we know that. Let's go and do it, see how it plays out. Now we've got something to have a conversation with after the end of it. Or you might even go, well, I think this will happen, so you might want to keep this in your back pocket. Oh, right, yeah, that's good, thank you. You know, do you see what I mean? So it's called, there's a phrase which is called cognitive apprenticeship.
Right.
Which is, if you can, the idea of demonstrating. So one of the things I think that we could be much better at demonstrating is our thought patterns. Well, this is how I would think through this. Going, oh God, that's... Because if you like, this podcast in itself is a one big demonstration. It's of two people talking through about mm-hmm. how they do things. It's not it's an auditory demonstration rather than a visual demonstration, but it is still us demonstrating our thought patterns and our thinking with these things.
It's interesting because as you're speaking, I'm just thinking about a couple of things, and it's making me reflect on my interactions with some coaches, and I probably wouldn't have maybe articulated or described it in that way, but I think that's basically what I've been doing. And I often say to coaches sometimes, when I'm talking to you as a coach and I'm a coach developer, quite often, if you pay attention to the way I'm speaking, actually I'm really just sharing with you my thought patterns, my thinking, my considerations, rather than telling you what's right, what's wrong, or maybe trying to advise you specifically. I'm taking you through, like you said, demonstrating my thought patterns. And I think it's really important because obviously sometimes when it comes to planning in particular, look at practice design and look at that, we talk a lot about trying to create practices which have got a realism element to it. And sometimes, I think the challenge within that is you get coaches who are torn between coaching the topic that they've been going after and actually coaching what realism would look like in a game. Mm. And I often just get them to, a question I've started asking a lot of coaches, if you've just asked Andy to do that, if Andy did that on match day, what would you say to him?
Mm-hmm.
If he did it exactly like you've just shown him to do in this session, would you praise or would you discourage it? Because if you're going to discourage it in a game, then you probably shouldn't be doing it in the session.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's probably going to repeat what he's practiced in training.
Yeah.
Now, if that's the case, can you just start to, just think, what would you want him to do in a game? Now, not because you, and it's very, you've got to be very careful because you don't want to go down the route of, well, everything must be games. I'm not saying that at all. But actually, the decisions that you want Andy to make should be representative of what you want him to do on a match day.
Yeah.
Or at least some version of what you'd like him to do on a match day, not because it's the same technical aspect, but actually the considerations for why he's made those decisions are still somewhat closely linked. And I find that in particular with that type of question, that coaches do really start becoming a bit more curious. Like, what do you mean?
Because you've now given me a sense that I don't know something, so you've generated curiosity. But by the way, where you've just said, I wouldn't necessarily put it like that. And that's why folk theory, if you've got folk theory, giving people some academic theory can really bring things going, oh, right, now I get it. So you've actually really just accurately described going, often when you share with experienced practitioners academic theory, it's rarely that new.
Yeah.
Because people go, I sort of do that already. And now you've got me thinking about it. Because you've created a sense of deprivation, so people start to get curious and they start going a bit of a journey with it. So, and that's exactly how a lot of this works. And it's why it's more often feels more rewarding to work with more experienced practitioners, because they pick up on things quicker. But it's because they've already got the folk theory, whereas younger practitioners don't have the folk theory. So you're starting in a different space. And you, for me at that point, you have to shift your mindset about what's going to make this exciting for me as a coach developer. Because actually, you know, like the coaches I was working with yesterday, they're like, brilliant. We've just got on so quickly with so many things. But they're all very experienced practitioners. And they say, well, what's it like with younger people? So you've just got to shift your mindset, which is what's exciting about working with younger people. And exciting, what's exciting for me working with them is trying to get them to recognize that they're interesting and that they've got an interesting journey ahead of them. And actually talking to each other is a powerful thing to do, because teenagers often won't talk to each other very much, because of where, unless it's about, you know, have you seen this TikTok or whatever? Obviously, we talked about some things, but talking about their coaching experiences, they'll tend to sort of, because they're worried about sounding not very good and embarrassing themselves, and you're back to impression management again. So trying to help people realize they're interesting and it's okay to cock up and, you know, have a conversation and talk through things. It's just different parts of where people are on the journey. You've got to find, for me, what's exciting about being with them in that part of the journey, and how do you facilitate them making the next step? So when they've done that, but that always to me comes back with the end in mind, which was, well, what's the end in mind for us with university undergraduate students? What's the end in mind after the first semester, the second semester, the first year? You get into, well, it's a new experience. It's classic football. They transition from this point to this point. Well, what are we going to do with them to make them feel comfortable in this space and feel good about themselves in this space? And then we've done that. Well, you've been in it for a year now. Now we're going to start layering in a little bit. It's going to get tougher now, because actually we've got you to that point. So what's the next end in mind? And what's the next end in mind? So you start to plan the journey based on what's the end in mind.
I think what's really, really good about the way you've articulated that is that there seems to be a constant point of setting expectations as well and managing those expectations. I think is really important when you're working with, well, whether it be coaches or players, right? Because, well, I want to know what the journey's meant to look like for me, because it then allows me to start to be a bit more aligned and focused on what that journey looks like, and knowing that. Because if I don't know where I'm going, it can kind of disinterest me sometimes. Kind of disengage me. But, you know, I'm curious, you know, there's a lot of things that we've kind of unpacked in both this discussion and the previous one, but I guess my question for you would be, you know, if there's one thing that you want coaches to reflect on off the back of listening to this conversation, what would that be?
I suppose if you boil it down, and it's, which is always very hard, it's think about how you're arriving at your decisions. What's informing your decisions? And I've talked about academic theory, and you might have access to that, but everyone has access to something which would perhaps make them more curious. So even going onto YouTube and pulling off a drill or a practice, are you just going to take that, or are you going to look at it and go, well, how do I take that and make it relevant to my players? So just think about the, you know, what's the, where you're trying to take people to, and why do you think that? And when I do something, why do I do that? I mean, I think that one of the best questions that I'll perhaps finish on this one. I remember being in a session somewhere and someone saying, you shouldn't ask the question why. And I sat there with my mouth open and went, oh my God, that is the last thing you should be telling people. But then you go, why am I so surprised that that person said that? I went, so I thought, well, why would you say that? So I reflected on it, and what it came back down to is often for younger people, the question why typically precedes, and excuse my French, typically precedes a bit of a bollocking. Why have you done that?
Yeah.
So we associate why with, oh God, something's about to happen here. So rather than why being a question of exploration and curiosity, it becomes a proceeding to someone about to be told off.
Yeah.
And I go, well, that's actually quite interesting. So to me, it's not the question why, it's the way you ask the question why.
Yeah.
So why have you done that versus, oh, why have you done that? So you see, so it's in the phrasing, because to me, why is ultimately the best question?
Yeah.
Because it's a question which encourages to go and explore and be curious. But if our perception of why is, you know, someone's basically accusing me of something here, then we won't ask it. So yeah, perhaps that's, yeah, ask yourself
really
why.
Interesting. It's really interesting because even, you know, and I'll think about my engagement in coach development, even working with players as well, I often start in my first interaction, I let them know, I'm going to ask you a hell of a lot of questions and it's not to catch you out. And I'm really, really conscious about setting that tone of it is not to catch you out. It's just to explore what's going on right now. And more specifically to identify what you may know, what you may think, and to see where I can best plug myself into that process. And I constantly reinforce that to eventually get to a point where they realize actually the why is not proceeding a bollocking. It's just him being curious.
Yeah.
And him wanting to know more about what's going on. So I guess, you know, linked to that then, my final question for you would be, you've talked a little about what maybe coaches could start to think about. But from a coach developer standpoint, what's something that a coach developer is listening to this could maybe think about or consider doing to potentially increase and enhance that professional judgment piece within coaches?
I think there's lots of answers to that question. And I think the first one is, it will still come back to ask, keep asking yourself why. But one of the things I suppose I'm becoming more aware of is how interested is coach development in the people that are being developed? Is there space to be curious about them? And often my sense is the space isn't created, because often there's, you know, people always say, oh, we should be doing this in coach development. And my question often to that is, that's great. What do you want to take out? Because it's not like coach development courses are sat with, oh, what should we do today? Generally, they are packed full of stuff. And often probably too much stuff would be, you know, the packed curriculum is often one of the biggest problems for any educator, is that what do we take out of this? Should we take some stuff out? And we go through that as in our degree course as well. But I think one of my major reflections is how much is coach development actually interested in the coach? So one of the things I was speaking to these coaches about yesterday is, what would happen if you just asked them to bring a photograph in and talk to you about that photograph? And if coach development did that in terms of, and it's just an idea, I'm not saying that we should do it, but what would happen if you had a group of 20 coaches and you had three coach developers and say, well, let's just split into three groups. What I'd like you to do is show me a photograph of the people that you're coaching. And you get going, I'm not actually coaching yet. Well, that tells me something. Well, show me a different photograph. Because you can learn so much by them offering something, but they also start to model the need to be a bit vulnerable, because actually this is going to be quite a vulnerable journey. So let's start off with, not, you know, like I know I could do it quite easily because I'm an experienced practitioner, but what would happen if you asked an 18-year-old to do that? Well, I'm not really doing it. I haven't got a team. Well, okay, bring a team that you played for. Talk to me about that team. Well, these are my friends. Well, you know, you can prompt the questions then in terms of, so if they finish after 30 seconds, you might be going, well, come on, tell me about that person there. And they can learn that it's okay to be interesting about people. And then you learn something about them and you've got a journey then you can start thinking about them with.
And I guess it promotes vulnerability, right?
Yeah.
Which I think is really key.
Yeah.
Which is really key. Andy, it's been fascinating again.
It's amazing how time quickly time goes with these things.
Yeah, 100%. And again, it's given me loads of food for thought, and especially in terms of both, you know, as a coach as well as a coach developer. And I think, you know, I'm sure anyone listening to this has probably been sparked with some curiosity as well. So, you know, really appreciate your thoughts and your insights. But again, yeah, massive thank you again, Andy.
You're very welcome.
Awesome. Well, there you have it, guys. Another episode of Coaches Network podcast. Massive thanks to Professor Andy Abraham. And I'm sure you guys will have taken as much away from it as I have. And if you haven't, well, you're missing out. Massive, massive thank you again for Andy Abraham. Really appreciate it. Take care, guys. Have a great day.
But there you have it, guys. Another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent, and personal development together to just one platform. And you can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favorite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram at the Coaches Network or on Twitter at the Coaches Net. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care.
Hey, baseball fans, it's time to swing big on your bets this season. Step up to the plate with an odds boost token from BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. No opt-in is required. Just log into your BetMGM account to receive your odds boost token. Then, place a bet on any MLB game and activate your token. If your boosted bet hits, you'll score a bigger payout, no matter the showdown. BetMGM is your betting home for baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotion offer not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. For Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 1 to 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business and sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.